Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. And when a friend is diagnosed with cancer or another serious illness, it can change the relationship dynamic so much that we might not even know how to make basic conversation around each other. Have you been in this position from either side? Letty Cotton Pogrebin wrote about her own experience dealing with her friends while dealing with breast cancer in a new book, How to Be a Friend to a Friend Who's Sick. She also interviewed more than 80 people dealing with serious illness, many of them fellow patients at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Letty, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And listeners, we want to hear from you on this. Have you struggled with or succeeded at being a friend to someone with a serious illness, or have you been through an illness that either strengthened or put a strain on a friendship? Give us a call. Tell us your story and the lesson from that story for all the other listeners who are or will someday be in this awkward situation. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And you're right that illness is friendship's proving ground. But if people already know how to be friends to their friends, why do things get harder when someone gets sick?
Well, it's one thing to have coffee with a friend or go to a ball game with a friend or, you know, a party with a friend. And quite another thing, when there's an existential tremor in the room between you, people don't know how to react. They don't know what to say. They kind of take refuge in cliches, which strike us really, I think, offensively. Most of us who've been sick, we don't want to hear God only gives you as much as you can handle. Not helpful. So the conversation has to get to a point where you can be honest with one another. That, I think, is the bottom line message of my book. Start from the moment you've been diagnosed or from the moment your friend tells you they've been diagnosed. Say, you know, let's really be honest. Let's go through this together. Tell me what you need. Tell me what you don't want, and I will do the very best I can.
Including tell me when you don't want to talk about it, because maybe that's one of the hardest things to game out. Am I helping my friend by asking about the illness, or am I making them look something in the eye that they would rather look away from at this minute and be distracted by our talk about baseball or cooking or whatever we're talking about?
It's counterintuitive, but one of the worst things you can say to a sick person is, how are you? Because the how are you usually takes a tone that's kind of
It's not a real question, usually.
It's kind of, how are you? And then you say, well, I'm fine, or I'm dealing with it. And they say, no, I mean really. And then you sort of feel you have to go back and revisit the very uncomfortable moment of diagnosis and when you had to kind of figure out whether you're going to have surgery or what your treatment's going to be. And you don't necessarily want to engage in that because you're getting past it. You're feeling as if I have to be normal. I have to finally revisit my normality. That's the gift you give people when you talk about what I call capital O, capital T, other things, baseball, cooking, gossip. You know, try as fast as you can to help the sick person renormalize.
How did you deal with how are you? Because people just say it as a tick. It's not really a question. It's just part of hello.
Yes. Right. It is sort of basic social discourse to say, start a conversation with how are you. I think the better thing to say is, what are you feeling these days? Or how great it is to see you. Another thing to avoid is, you look great. You look great is freighted with kind of the assumption that I expected you to look like death warmed over and I'm really surprised, or you really don't look great. I'm just kind of making you feel good.
But if that's something that people ordinarily say to each other, that a particular friend is in the habit of saying, should she stop? Should he stop?
Actually, I counsel people to keep saying you look great, because if you stop saying what you used to say, that too sends a message, a negative message.
Lexi in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lexi.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. This is like so close to my heart. My situation is a little bit unique because I'm a nurse and I met my friend in the hospital. And we became friends. We even started dating. And when he started getting sicker, he was diagnosed with stage 4 melanoma. He started pulling away, and I was almost taking it like personally. I didn't quite understand what he was going through, even though I'm a nurse and I work with sick people all the time. But I think, you know, he and I would have conversations, and I would say, you know, I just don't want you to feel like I'm intruding on you. And he's like, I don't feel that way. And I would just continue to text him and call, and just like your guest is saying, not like, how are you, but like, hey, how are you feeling? Or, you know, what's been going on? And I would also try and normalize him with, you know, silly conversation or like a funny story, things like that. And recently he passed away. And before he did, I saw him in the hospital. And I think just having presence of like norm, like a little bit of like me, who was like somebody who saw something in him beyond his cancer. I think that meant a lot to him. And his family told me that. But I just would sit with him.
Yeah, Lexi, you said the magic words, that you just sat with him. Very often, it's the presence of a friend that makes the difference. We don't necessarily want to talk about the finality of an illness, or we don't want to talk about how we're feeling. We don't want to go through our symptoms. We just want to know you're there. So you gave him a period of time when you were kind of normalizing him, as you said, with conversation, and you were affirming the meaning of your friendship. Yeah. But there came a time when you just were there. That's enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes he felt like he didn't want to burden me with some of his like anger around what his diagnosis.
Also, you know,
he wanted to like vent, I was just like, it's okay. Like, you'd start venting, and I'd be like, you can vent to me anytime. Like, you know, so sometimes he did want to do that.
Great. I mean, you sound like a perfect friend to me. I think that we have to also acknowledge that we represent health. We walk in the room. We're vital. Right. We're coming from a very engaged life. We bring energy. And that contrast is not lost on the patient.
Yeah.
So in a way, seeing our friends also can be a downer. They're a reminder.
Experience their sense of loss. Lexi, I'm going to move on and get some other folks on. Thank you very much. A good friend there. And somebody in the patient's position, our next caller, Judith and Chelsea. Judith, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Sorry. Another thing that I experienced, and I've heard other people who've gone through a serious illness experience, is that when you do share with a friend that there's been a serious diagnosis, you don't want it to be trivialized. In other words, I had a very close friend who said, oh, you're going to be fine. I just know it. I know about those things. And it kind of dismisses the feeling that the experience that you're going through.
Right. I have a section in the book about what not to do. And that's, I think, like number 3 on the list, not to minimize, not to say, as one woman said to a friend, oh, well, you got it early, so I'm sure you'll be fine. And it turns out that friend didn't get it all early. She was in stage 3. So the friend had made an assumption, just because that sort of bromide comes out of your mouth before you know it. And the trivialization is one real hazard. Another one is that when people hear what you have, they say, oh, my uncle had that and he's fine, as if that's going to relate to your eventual condition. I think
because you want to be reassuring
you do.
To the person.
It's a very positive and admirable motivation, but it registers on the other person as, what the heck do I care about what happened to your uncle?
Right. And it's also just saying, you know, it's nothing. You don't have to worry. Right. I mean, it shouldn't be that your worrying is brought upon your friend, but that a dismissal of something that's quite serious is not helpful.
Right. It's not helpful, and it's also something that people do for themselves.
Exactly.
They need to reassure themselves that you're going to be okay. And they also need to know that, you know, if something like this happens to me, I'll be okay. There's an awful lot of, you know, little kind of flashes in the brain of, wow.
We're all mortal.
We're all mortal. And this is coming a little too close to the bone.
Judith, thank you. Letty Cotton Pogrebin with us, her new book, How to Be a Friend to a Friend Who's Sick. Our lines are full, so I shouldn't even give out the number, 212-433-WNYC. Post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. People already taking a lot of solace, a lot of advice from this conversation. Barbara Ehrenreich appeared on our show in December of, 2011 to discuss her book, Brightsided, when the subject of her own breast cancer diagnosis came up and the interaction that she had with friends and relatives. Listen to a little of what Barbara Ehrenreich said.
I was stunned that by the constant exhortations to be positive. If I wanted to get better, I had to think positively. If I had any doubts or negative feelings or fear or anger, which I had a lot of, I would condemn myself. And all the pink ribbons and the races and everything was about keeping upbeat. Now, I want to point out that, Brian, that we have plenty of evidence now that whether you recover or not from cancer has nothing to do with your outlook. But I found it really oppressive when I was going through this because, in a way, I was being told if I didn't get better, it was my own fault.
So Barbara Ehrenreich on the show in December 2010, to be accurate, her book, Brightsided, was all about what she considers the fraud of positive thinking and the sort of positive thinking industry. And as she said at the end of the clip, how people wind up feeling like they're going to blame themselves if they don't get better because they weren't thinking positively enough.
Exactly. And, in a way, death is your punishment for not thinking positively. When someone is really, really sick and they know that they're declining and you keep saying chin up, or you keep saying, you can beat this when they know they can't, then it's suddenly, what have I done to deserve this? What should I have done? Did I actually cause my illness by being neurotic, And this adds another layer of pain and guilt and sorrow because you can't go back. And you sort of feel as though not only has medical science failed you, but you've failed yourself. That is not a gift to a friend.
Sherry in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm dealing with chronic Lyme disease. And along with this chronic Lyme disease, I've had a host of other issues that have come up that have just continued on for the past 5 years. I'm on disability. I've lost a lot of friends because they don't really know how to, handle it. I've asked them if they could email me and text me because I'm not really usually up for talking. Today's an unusual day. And here's what happens. Occasionally, I have great days. I don't know where they come from. I don't know how. It's all these different treatments I'm doing. Sometimes they work. Sometimes they don't. I had a 7-week period where I was just, like, completely normal, and I was out looking for a job. But what happens is that people, even my sister, she'll say something like, well, hope you feel better, like I have a cold. And that's hurtful to me because it's like I don't have a cold. I have a chronic illness. I'm in bed a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. I can't work. I can't play,
Yeah.
I can't have fun. And it just, people just don't understand it.
Lyme disease is one of those illnesses I do talk about in the book that people almost blame you for. It's kind of like, it must be in your head. I don't see any symptoms. Why are you so tired? I mean, you don't look sick. You don't seem
exactly
sick. And I think that there also is an element of don't show how miserable you are because your friends won't want to be around you. So
okay.
You feel the pressure to be up so that you deserve people's friendship. And the real test of friendship is the long haul. How can your friends be with you, responsive to you, useful, helpful, even fun, without expecting you always to be chipper?
Right, right.
What would be a better greeting or a parting phrase than hope you feel better for you, Sherry?
What would be better, honestly, in my heart would be for them to say, just look, I know what you're, I can only imagine what you're going through. And I'm here for you, you know. Do you want me to email you tomorrow? Do you need anything? I don't even really actually, and I don't want to play a victim here because I'm not. I take responsibility for my illness, and every day I am up and I'm doing research and I'm doing the best I can to try to get up and on with my life. I would like them to just say, look, you know, this is your process right now. This is your journey, and I'm here for you if you need me. You
That's
know,
it.
If you want me to pick you up something, I can come over. But people are afraid, I think, to kind of like deal with it.
Yeah, you know, with chronic illness and with, for example, someone who has a permanent injury, somebody with who's a paraplegic, you would not say, "Hope you feel better." To a paraplegic, you know that that's it. That's the way the person is. That's their norm. That's their most healthy self. So if it's helpful to friends to stop that linear thinking of someone goes from sick to well. Some people stay with their condition, and you have to adapt. You adapt in ways that become a sort of a high consciousness of how words really can be interpreted wrongly. These cliches like, hope you feel better, suggest that I'm going to get better, and I'm not going to get better. This is who I am. This is what I am. Please relate to me at that level. You're asking a very simple thing. And you just said something that is, one of my bottom lines. I can only imagine how you feel, because that's the truth. When we haven't had Lyme disease, and we haven't been a paraplegic, and we haven't had stage 4 ovarian cancer, we can only imagine how that feels. So why not just say that instead of saying, oh, I'm sure you'll be fine.
Right.
Sherry, thank you.
By the way, Lyme Disease Awareness Month is next month, and we're having a rally in Union Square. I would love it if people would just, keep that in mind, because cancer awareness is 12 months out of the year, but Lyme disease is 1 month, and it's a epidemic.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. So we're almost out of time, but what responsibility does the sick person have in this new relationship dynamic?
Mm-hmm.
Should they tell their friend to back off when it's getting to be too much? Should they tell them in advance what they want and what they don't want?
That's my policy. Honesty, so simple. It's sort of three givens. The friend should say, tell me how I can be helpful and not helpful. Tell me when you want to be alone and when you want company. And, tell me what to bring and when to leave. Because the visits dynamic is very complicated. People think they should show up, and sometimes they shouldn't. People think that you want, them to sit on the edge of your bed and hold your hand, and sometimes that's the last thing you want. You want space and distance and maybe solitude. So ask and act, both. It's not an either or.
Letty Cotton Pogrebin will be appearing, if you want to see more and hear more and interact, in a lunch and interview with Pat Mitchell at the Paley Center on Tuesday, April 16th at 12:30. And she'll be back in New York for another appearance at the 92nd Street Y on May 5th. That's also a book-related appearance.
Mm-hmm. With Phil Donahue being my interviewer.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And can I pluck you for your other expertise of yours before you go and make a segue, because we're going to talk about how people are already talking about and seemingly obsessed with Hillary Clinton and whether she'll run for president in 2016. And so with your feminist credentials and National Women's Political Caucus that you're involved in and all that stuff, is it something that excites you very much?
Very much. I was a strong Hillary supporter. It took a little doing to switch to Obama. Of course, I did. And I would love it if she ran. I think she'd be marvelous. I don't agree with her on everything. Some of her foreign policy stuff is a problem for me. But I think she'd be a powerful and effective leader.
And when you hear people in the media talking about it already in advance of 2016, do you roll your eyes and say, oh, give me a break?
Yeah.
Or are you like, this is actually so exciting and still so important, glass ceiling, her, the whole thing, that let's go, and we have the chance.
Well, I'm just very excited at the prospect. Of course, I would like us to focus on the politics of the moment, however.
Yeah.
So I feel both, I guess.
Letty Cotton Pogrebin's new book is How to Be a Friend to a Friend Who's Sick. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, you can keep the advice flowing at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show, and we'll talk next to Rebecca Traister about Hillary, 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 Hillary.